Chapter 38. Annabeth. The most insulting part? The dragon was easily the most beautiful thing Annabeth had seen since she had fallen into Tartarus. Its hide was dappled green and yellow, like sunlight through a forest canopy. Its reptilian eyes were Annabeth's favorite shade of sea green, just like Percy's. When its frills unfurled around its head, Annabeth couldn't help but think what a regal and amazing monster it was that was about to kill her. It was easily as long as a subway train. Its massive talons dug into the mud as it pulled itself forward, its tail whipping from side to side. The draken hissed, spitting jets of green poison that smoked on the mossy ground and set tar pits on fire, filling the air with the scent of fresh pine and ginger. The monster even smelled good. Like most drakens, it was wingless, longer, and more snake-like than a dragon, and it looked hungry.
"Bob," Annabeth said, "what are we facing here?"
"Meonian draken," Bob said. "From Meonia."
More helpful information. Annabeth would have smacked Bob upside the head with his own broom if she could lift it.
"Any way we can kill it?"
"Us?" Bob said. "No."
The draken roared as if to accentuate the point, filling the air with more pine ginger poison, which would have made an excellent car freshener scent.
"Get Percy to safety," Annabeth said. "I'll distract it."
She had no idea how she would do that, but it was her only choice. She couldn't let Percy die, not if she still had the strength to stand.
"You don't have to," Bob said. "Any minute..."
Annabeth turned as the giant emerged from his hut. He was about 20 feet tall, typical giant height, with a humanoid upper body and scaly reptilian legs, like a bipedal dinosaur. He held no weapon. Instead of armor, he wore only a shirt, stitched together from sheep hides and green spotted leather. His skin was cherry red, his beard and hair the color of iron rust, braided with tufts of grass, leaves, and swamp flowers. He shouted in challenge, but thankfully he wasn't looking at Annabeth. Bob pulled her out of the way as the giant stormed toward the draken. They clashed like some sort of weird Christmas combat scene, the red versus the green. The draken spewed poison. The giant lunged to one side. He grabbed the oak tree and pulled it from the ground, roots and all. The old skull crumbled to dust as the giant hefted the tree like a baseball bat. The draken's tail lashed around the giant's waist, dragging him closer to its gnashing teeth. But as soon as the giant was in range, he shoved the tree straight down the monster's throat. Annabeth hoped she never had to see such a gruesome scene again. The tree pierced the draken's gullet and impaled it to the ground. The roots began to move, digging deeper as they touched the earth, anchoring the oak until it looked like it had stood in that spot for centuries. The draken shook and thrashed, but it was pinned fast. The giant brought his fist down on the draken's neck. Crack! The monster went limp. It began to dissolve, leaving only scraps of bone, meat, hide, and a new draken skull whose open jaws ringed the oak tree. Bob grunted,
"Good one."
The kitten purred in agreement and started cleaning his paws. The giant kicked at the draken's remains, examining them critically.
"No good bones," he complained. "I wanted a new walking stick. Some good skin for the outhouse, though."
He ripped some soft hide from the dragon's frills and tucked it in his belt. Annabeth wanted to ask if the giant really used drakenhide for toilet paper, but she decided against it.
Bob, do you want to introduce us?
Annabeth? Bob patted Percy's legs. This is Percy.
Annabeth hoped the Titan was just messing with her, though Bob's face revealed nothing. She gritted her teeth.
I meant the giant. You promised he could help.
Promise?
The giant glanced over from his work. His eyes narrowed under his bushy red brows.
A big thing, a promise. Why would Bob promise my help?
Bob shifted his weight. Titans were scary, but Annabeth had never seen one next to a giant before. Compared to the Draken Killer, Bob looked downright runty.
Damascene is a good giant, Bob said. He is peaceful. He can cure poisons.
Annabeth watched the giant Damascene, who was now ripping chunks of bloody meat from the Draken carcass with his bare hands.
Peaceful, she said. Yes, I can see that.
Good meat for dinner.
Damascene stood up straight and studied Annabeth, as if she were another potential source of protein.
Come inside. We will have stew. Then we will see about this promise.
Chapter 39. Annabeth. Cozy. Annabeth never thought she would describe anything in Tartarus that way. But despite the fact that the giant's hut was as big as a planetarium and constructed of bones, mud, and draken skin, it definitely felt cozy. In the center blazed a bonfire made of pitch and bone, yet the smoke was white and odorless, rising through the hole in the middle of the ceiling. The floor was covered with dry marsh grass and gray wool rugs. At one end lay a massive bed of sheepskins and draken leather. At the other end, freestanding racks were hung with drying plants, cured leather, and what looked like strips of draken jerky. The whole place smelled of stew, smoke, basil, and thyme. The only thing that worried Annabeth was the flock of sheep huddled in a pen at the back of the hut. Annabeth remembered the cave of Polyphemus, the Cyclops who ate demigods and sheep indiscriminately. She wondered if giants had similar tastes. Part of her was tempted to run, but Bob had already placed Percy in the giant's bed, where he nearly disappeared in the wool and leather. Small Bob hopped off Percy and kneaded the blankets, purring so strongly the bed rattled like a thousand-finger massage. Damascene plodded to the bonfire. He tossed his draken meat into a hanging pot that seemed to be made from an old monster skull, then picked up a ladle and began to stir. Annabeth didn't want to be the next ingredient in his stew, but she'd come here for a reason. She took a deep breath and marched up to Damascene.
My friend is dying. Can you cure him or not?
Her voice caught on the word friend. Percy was a lot more than that. Even boyfriend really didn't cover it. They'd been through so much together. At this point, Percy was part of her. A sometimes annoying part, sure, but definitely a part she could not live without. Damascene looked down at her, glowering under his bushy red eyebrows. Annabeth had met large, scary humanoids before, but Damascene unsettled her in a different way. He didn't seem hostile. He radiated sorrow and bitterness, as if he were so wrapped up in his own misery that he resented Annabeth for trying to make him focus on anything else.
I don't hear words like those in Tartarus. The giant grumbled. Friend, promise.
Annabeth crossed her arms.
How about Gorgon's blood? Can you cure that?
Or did Bob overstate your talents? Angering a 20-foot-tall dragon slayer probably wasn't a wise strategy, but Percy was dying. She didn't have time for diplomacy. Damison scowled at her.
You question my talents? A half-dead mortal straggles into my swamp and questions my talents?
Yep, she said.
Hmph.
Damison handed Bob the ladle.
Stir.
As Bob tended the stew, Damison perused his drying racks, plucking various leaves and roots. He popped a fistful of plant material into his mouth, chewed it up, then spit it into a clump of wool.
Cup of broth,
Damison ordered. Bob ladled some stew juice into a hollow gourd. He handed it to Damison, who dunked the chewed-up gunk ball and stirred it with his finger.
Gorgon's blood, he muttered. Hardly a challenge for my talents.
He lumbered to the bedside and propped up Percy with one hand. Small Bob the kitten sniffed the broth and hissed. He scratched the sheets with his paws like he wanted to bury it.
You're going to feed him that?
Annabeth asked.
The giant glared at her. Who is the healer here? You?
Annabeth shut her mouth. She watched as the giant made Percy sip the broth. Damison handled him with surprising gentleness, murmuring words of encouragement that she couldn't quite catch. With each sip, Percy's color improved. He drained the cup, and his eyes fluttered open. He looked around with a dazed expression, spotted Annabeth, and gave her a drunken grin.
Feel great.
His eyes rolled up in his head. He fell back in the bed and began to snore.
A few hours of sleep, Damison pronounced. He'll be good as new.
Annabeth sobbed with relief.
Thank you,
she said. Damison stared at her mournfully.
Oh, don't thank me. You're still doomed, and I require payment for my services.
Annabeth's mouth went dry.
What sort of payment?
A story.
The giant's eyes glittered.
It gets boring in Tartarus. You can tell me your story while we eat, eh?
Annabeth felt uneasy telling a giant about their plans. Still, Damison was a good host. He'd saved Percy. His dragon meat stew was excellent, especially compared to firewater. His hut was warm and comfortable, and for the first time since plunging into Tartarus, Annabeth felt like she could relax, which was ironic since she was having dinner with a titan and a giant. She told Damison about her life and her adventures with Percy. She explained how Percy had met Bob, wiped his memory in the river Lethe, and left him in the care of Hades.
Percy was trying to do something good, she promised Bob. He didn't know Hades would be such a creep.
Even to her, it didn't sound convincing. Hades was always a creep. She thought about what the Arai had said, how Nico D'Angelo had been the only person to visit Bob in the Palace of the Underworld. Nico was one of the least outgoing, least friendly demigods Annabeth knew, yet he'd been kind to Bob. By convincing Bob that Percy was a friend, Nico had inadvertently saved their lives. Annabeth wondered if she would ever figure that guy out. Bob washed his bowl with his squirt bottle and rag. Damison made a rolling gesture with his spoon.
Continue your story, Annabeth Chase.
She explained about their quest in the Argo II. When she got to the part about stopping Gia from waking, she faltered.
She's your mom, right?
Damison scraped his bowl. His face was covered with old poison burns, gouges, and scar tissue, so it looked like the surface of an asteroid.
"Yes," he said. "And Tartarus is my father."
He gestured around the hut.
"As you can see, I was a disappointment to my parents. They expected more from me."
Annabeth couldn't quite wrap her mind around the fact that she was sharing soup with a 20-foot-tall lizard-legged man whose parents were Earth and the Pit of Darkness. Olympian gods were hard enough to imagine as parents, but at least they resembled humans. The old primordial gods like Gaia and Tartarus? How could you leave home and ever be independent of your parents when they literally encompassed the entire world?
"So," she said, "you don't mind us fighting your mom?"
Damison snorted like a bull.
"Best of luck. At present, it's my father you should worry about. With him opposing you, you have no chance to survive."
Suddenly, Annabeth didn't feel so hungry. She put her bowl on the floor. Small Bob came over to check it out.
"Opposing us how?" she asked.
"All of this."
Damison cracked a dragon bone and used a splinter as a toothpick.
"All that you see is the body of Tartarus, or at least one manifestation of it. He knows you are here. He tries to thwart your progress at every step. My brethren hunt you. It is remarkable you have lived this long, even with the help of Iapetus."
Bob scowled when he heard his name.
"The defeated ones hunt us. Yes, they will be close behind now."
Damison spat out his toothpick.
"I can obscure your path for a while, long enough for you to rest. I have power in this swamp, but eventually they will catch you."
"My friends must reach the doors of death," Bob said. "That is the way out."
"Impossible," Damison muttered. "The doors are too well guarded."
Annabeth sat forward.
"But you know where they are?"
"Of course. All of Tartarus flows down to one place. His heart. The doors of death are there. But you cannot make it there alive with only Iapetus."
"Then come with us," Annabeth said. "Help us."
"Ha!"
Annabeth jumped. In the bed, Percy muttered deliriously in his sleep.
"Ha, ha, ha."
"Child of Athena," the giant said, "I am not your friend. I helped mortals once, and you see where it got me."
"You helped mortals?"
Annabeth knew a lot about Greek legends, but she drew a total blank on the name Damison.
I don't understand."
"Bad story," Bob explained. "Good giants have bad stories. Damison was created to oppose Ares."
"Yes," the giant agreed. "Like all my brethren, I was born to answer a certain god. My foe was Ares, but Ares was the god of war. And so, when I was born..."
"You were his opposite," Annabeth guessed. "You were peaceful."
"Peaceful for a giant, at least," Damison sighed. "I wandered the fields of Meonia, in the land you now call Turkey. I tended my sheep and collected my herbs. It was a good life, but I would not fight the gods. My mother and father cursed me for that. The final insult: one day the Meonian dragon killed a human shepherd, a friend of mine. So I hunted the creature down and slew it, thrusting a tree straight through its mouth. I used the power of the earth to regrow the tree's roots, planting the dragon firmly in the ground. I made sure it would terrorize mortals no more. That was a deed Gaia could not forgive."
"Because you helped someone?"
"Yes."
Damison looked ashamed.
Gia opened the earth and I was consumed. Exiled here in the belly of my father, Tartarus, where all the useless flotsam collects. All the bits of creation he does not care for.
The giant plucked a flower out of his hair and regarded it absently.
They let me live, tending my sheep, collecting my herbs, so I might know the uselessness of the life I chose. Every day, or what passes for day in this lightless place, the Meonian dragon reforms and attacks me. Killing it is my endless task.
Annabeth gazed around the hut, trying to imagine how many eons Damison had been exiled here, slaying the dragon, collecting its bones and hide and meat, knowing it would attack again the next day. She could barely imagine surviving a week in Tartarus. Exiling your own son here for centuries? That was beyond cruel.
"Break the curse," she blurted out. "Come with us."
Damison chuckled sourly.
"As simple as that. Don't you think I have tried to leave this place? It is impossible. No matter which direction I travel, I end up here again. The swamp is the only thing I know. The only destination I can imagine. No, little demigod. My curse has overtaken me. I have no hope left."
"No hope," Bob echoed.
"There must be a way."
Annabeth couldn't stand the expression on the giant's face. It reminded her of her own father, the few times he'd confessed to her that he still loved Athena. He had looked so sad and defeated, wishing for something he knew was impossible.
"Bob has a plan to reach the doors of death," she insisted. "He said we could hide in some sort of death mist."
"Death mist?" Damison scowled at Bob. "You would take them to Aklis?"
"It is the only way," Bob said.
"You will die," Damison said. "Painfully, in darkness. Aklis trusts no one and helps no one."
Bob looked like he wanted to argue, but he pressed his lips together and remained silent.
"Is there another way?" Annabeth asked.
"No," Damison said. "The death mist. That is the best plan. Unfortunately, it is a terrible plan."
Annabeth felt like she was hanging over the pit again, unable to pull herself up, unable to maintain her grip, left with no good options.
"But isn't it worth trying?" she asked. "You could return to the mortal world. You could see the sun again."
Damison's eyes were like the sockets of the dragon's skull, dark and hollow, devoid of hope. He flicked a broken bone into the fire and rose to his full height, a massive red warrior in sheepskin and dragon leather, with dried flowers and herbs in his hair. Annabeth could see how he was the anti-Ares. Ares was the worst god, blustery and violent. Damison was the best giant, kind and helpful. And for that, he'd been cursed to eternal torment.
"Get some sleep," the giant said. "I will prepare supplies for your journey. I am sorry, but I cannot do more."
Annabeth wanted to argue, but as soon as he said sleep, her body betrayed her, despite her resolution never to sleep in Tartarus again. Her belly was full. The fire made a pleasant crackling sound. The herbs in the air reminded her of the hills around Camp Half-Blood in the summer, when the satyrs and naiads gathered wild plants in the lazy afternoons.
"Maybe a little sleep," she agreed.
Bob scooped her up like a rag doll. She didn't protest. He set her next to Percy on the giant's bed, and she closed her eyes. Chapter 40 Annabeth. Annabeth woke, staring at the shadows dancing across the hut's ceiling. She hadn't had a single dream. That was so unusual, she wasn't sure if she'd actually woken up. As she lay there, Percy snoring next to her and small Bob purring on her belly, she heard Bob and Damison deep in conversation.
"You haven't told her,"
Damison said.
"No,"
Bob admitted.
"She is already scared."
The giant grumbled.
"She should be. And if you cannot guide them past night?"
Damison said night like it was a proper name. An evil name.
"I have to," Bob said.
"Why?"
Damison wondered.
"What have the demigods given you? They have erased your old self. Everything you were. Titans and giants. We are meant to be the foes of the gods and their children, are we not?"
"Then why did you heal the boy?"
Damison exhaled.
"I have been wondering that myself. Perhaps because the girl goaded me. Or perhaps I find these two demigods intriguing. They are resilient to have made it so far. That is admirable. Still, how can we help them any further? It is not our fate."
"Perhaps," Bob said uncomfortably. "But do you like our fate?"
"What a question. Does anyone like his fate?"
"I liked being Bob," Bob murmured. "Before I started to remember..."
"Huh."
There was a shuffling sound, as if Damison was stuffing a leather bag.
"Damison," the Titan asked, "do you remember the sun?"
The shuffling stopped. Annabeth heard the giant exhale through his nostrils.
"Yes, it was yellow. When it touched the horizon, it turned the sky beautiful colors."
"I miss the sun," Bob said. "The stars, too. I would like to say hello to the stars again."
"Stars."
Damison said the word as if he'd forgotten its meaning.
"Yes, they made silver patterns in the night sky."
He threw something to the floor with a thump.
"Ah, this is useless talk. We cannot..."
In the distance, the Meonian dragon roared. Percy sat bolt upright.
What?
"It's okay." Annabeth took his arm. When he registered that they were together in a giant's bed with a skeleton cat, he looked more confused than ever.
"That noise, where are we?"
"How much do you remember?" she asked. Percy frowned. His eyes seemed alert. All his wounds had vanished. Except for his tattered clothes and a few layers of dirt and grime, he looked as if he'd never fallen into Tartarus.
The demon grandmothers, and then... not much."
Damison loomed over the bed.
"There is no time, little mortals. The dragon is returning. I fear its roar will draw the others, my brethren, hunting you. They will be here within minutes."
Annabeth's pulse quickened.
"What will you tell them when they get here?"
Damison's mouth twitched.
"What is there to tell? Nothing of significance as long as you are gone."
He tossed them two dragon leather satchels.
"Clothes, food, drink."
Bob was wearing a similar but larger pack. He leaned on his broom, gazing at Annabeth as if still pondering Damison's words.
"What have the demigods given you? We are meant to be the foes of the gods and their children."
Suddenly, Annabeth was struck by a thought so sharp and clear, it was like a blade from Athena herself.
"The prophecy of seven," she said.
Percy had already climbed out of the bed and was shouldering his pack. He frowned at her.
"What about it?"
Annabeth grabbed Damison's hand, startling the giant. His brow furrowed. His skin was as rough as sandstone.
"You have to come with us," she pleaded. "The prophecy says foes bear arms to the doors of death. I thought it meant Romans and Greeks, but that's not it. The line means us. Demigods, a titan, a giant. We need you to close the doors."
The dragon roared outside, closer this time. Damison gently pulled his hand away.
"No, child," he murmured. "My curse is here. I cannot escape it."
"Yes, you can," Annabeth said. "Don't fight the dragon. Figure out a way to break the cycle. Find another fate."
Damison shook his head.
"Even if I could, I cannot leave this swamp. It is the only destination I can picture."
Annabeth's mind raced.
"There is another destination. Look at me. Remember my face. When you're ready, come find me. We'll take you to the mortal world with us. You can see the sunlight and stars."
The ground shook. The dragon was close now, stomping through the marsh, blasting trees and moss with its poison spray. Farther away, Annabeth heard the voice of the giant Polybetes urging his followers forward.
"The sea god's son! He is close!"
"Annabeth," Percy said urgently, "that's our cue to leave."
Damison took something from his belt. In his massive hand, the white shard looked like another toothpick, but when he offered it to Annabeth, she realized it was a sword, a blade of dragon bone, honed to a deadly edge, with a simple grip of leather.
"One last gift for the child of Athena," rumbled the giant. "I cannot have you walking to your death unarmed. Now go! Before it is too late."
Annabeth wanted to sob. She took the sword, but she couldn't even make herself say thank you. She knew the giant was meant to fight at their side. That was the answer. But Damison turned away.
"We must leave," Bob urged as his kitten climbed onto his shoulder.
"He's right, Annabeth," Percy said.
They ran for the entrance. Annabeth didn't look back as she followed Percy and Bob into the swamp, but she heard Damison behind them, shouting his battle cry at the advancing dragon, his voice cracking with despair as he faced his old enemy yet again. Chapter 41. Piper. Piper didn't know much about the Mediterranean, but she was pretty sure it wasn't supposed to freeze in July. 2 days out to sea from Split, gray clouds swallowed the sky. The waves turned choppy. Cold drizzle sprayed across the deck, forming ice on the rails and the ropes.
"It's the scepter," Nico murmured, hefting the ancient staff. "It has to be."
Piper wondered. Ever since Jason and Nico had returned from Diocletian's palace, they'd been acting nervous and cagey. Something major had happened there, something Jason wouldn't share with her. It made sense that the scepter might have caused this weather change. The black orb on top seemed to leach the color right out of the air. The golden eagles at its base glinted coldly. The scepter could supposedly control the dead, and it definitely gave off bad vibes. Coach Hedge had taken one look at the thing, turned pale, and announced that he was going to his room to console himself with Chuck Norris videos. Although Piper suspected that he was actually making iris messages back home to his girlfriend, Melly. The coach had been acting very agitated about her lately, though he wouldn't tell Piper what was going on. So, yes, maybe the scepter could cause a freak ice storm, but Piper didn't think that was it. She feared something else was happening. Something even worse.
"We can't talk up here," Jason decided. "Let's postpone the meeting."
They'd all gathered on the quarterdeck to discuss strategy as they got closer to Epirus. Now it was clearly not a good place to hang out. Wind swept frost across the deck. The sea churned beneath them. Piper didn't mind the waves so much. The rocking and pitching reminded her of surfing with her dad off the California coast. But she could tell Hazel wasn't doing well. The poor girl got seasick even in calm waters. She looked like she was trying to swallow a billiard ball. "Need to..." Hazel gagged and pointed below.
"Yeah, go."
Nico kissed her cheek, which Piper found surprising. He hardly ever made gestures of affection, even to his sister. He seemed to hate physical contact. Kissing Hazel, it was almost like he was saying goodbye.
"I'll walk you down."
Frank put his arm around Hazel's waist and helped her to the stairs. Piper hoped Hazel would be okay. The last few nights, since that fight with Skyron, they'd had some good talks together. Being the only two girls on board was kind of rough. They'd shared stories, complained about the guy's gross habits, and shed some tears together about Annabeth. Hazel had told her what it was like to control the mist, and Piper had been surprised by how much it sounded like using charm speak. Piper had offered to help her if she could. In return, Hazel had promised to coach her in sword fighting, a skill at which Piper epically sucked. Piper felt like she had a new friend, which was great, assuming they lived long enough to enjoy the friendship. Nico brushed some ice from his hair. He frowned at the scepter of Diocletian.
"I should put this thing away. If it's really causing the weather, maybe taking it below deck will help."
"Sure," Jason said. Nico glanced at Piper and Leo, as if worried what they might say when he was gone. Piper felt his defenses going up, like he was curling into a psychological ball, the way he'd gone into a death trance in that bronze jar. Once he headed below, Piper studied Jason's face. His eyes were full of concern. What had happened in Croatia? Leo pulled a screwdriver from his belt.
"So much for the big team meeting. Looks like it's just us again."
Just us again. Piper remembered a wintry day in Chicago last December, when the three of them had landed in Millennial Park on their first quest. Leo hadn't changed much since then, except he seemed more comfortable in his role as a child of Hephaestus. He'd always had too much nervous energy. Now he knew how to use it. His hands were constantly in motion, pulling tools from his belt, working controls, tinkering with his beloved Archimedes sphere. Today, he'd removed it from the control panel and shut down Festus the figurehead for maintenance. Something about rewiring his processor for a motor control upgrade with the sphere. Whatever the heck that meant. As for Jason, he looked thinner, taller, and more careworn. His hair had gone from close-cropped Roman style to longer and shaggier. The groove Skyron had shot across the left side of his scalp was interesting, too, almost like a rebellious streak. His icy blue eyes looked older somehow, full of worry and responsibility. Piper knew what her friends whispered about Jason. He was too perfect, too straight-laced. If that had ever been true, it wasn't anymore. He'd been battered on this journey, and not just physically. His hardships hadn't weakened him, but he'd been weathered and softened like leather, as if he were becoming a more comfortable version of himself. And Piper? She could only imagine what Leo and Jason thought when they looked at her. She definitely didn't feel like the same person she'd been last winter. That first quest to rescue Hera seemed like centuries ago. So much had changed in 7 months, She wondered how the gods could stand being alive for thousands of years. How much change had they seen? Maybe it wasn't surprising that the Olympians seemed a little crazy. If Piper had lived through 3 millennia, she would have gone loopy. She gazed into the cold rain. She would have given anything to be back at Camp Half-Blood, where the weather was controlled even in the winter. The images she'd seen in her knife recently, well, they didn't give her much to look forward to. Jason squeezed her shoulder. "Hey, it'll be fine. We're close to Epirus now. Another day or so if Nico's directions are right."
"Yep."
Leo tinkered with his sphere, tapping and nudging one of the jewels on its surface. "By tomorrow morning, we'll reach the western coast of Greece. Then another hour inland and bang, House of Hades. I'ma get me the t-shirt."
"Yay," Piper muttered. She wasn't anxious to plunge into the darkness again. She still had nightmares about the Nymphaeum and the Hypogeum under Rome. In the Blade of Catoptris, she'd seen images similar to what Leo and Hazel had described from their dreams. A pale sorceress in a gold dress, her hands weaving golden light in the air like silk on a loom. A giant wrapped in shadows, marching down a long corridor lined with torches. As he passed each one, the flames died. She saw a huge cavern filled with monsters, cyclopes, earthborn, and stranger things, surrounding her and her friends, hopelessly outnumbering them. Every time she saw those images, a voice in her head kept repeating one line over and over.
"Guys," she said, "I've been thinking about the prophecy of 7.
It took a lot to get Leo's attention away from his work, but that did the trick.
"What about it?" he asked. "Like, good stuff, I hope?"
She readjusted her cornucopia's shoulder strap. Sometimes the Horn of Plenty seemed so light she forgot about it. Other times it felt like an anvil, as if the river god Achelous was sending out bad thoughts, trying to punish her for taking his horn.
"In Catoptris," she started, "I keep seeing that giant Clytius, the guy who's wrapped in shadows. I know his weakness is fire, but in my visions, he snuffs out flames wherever he goes. Any kind of light just gets sucked into his cloud of darkness."
"Sounds like Nico," Leo said. "You think they're related?"
Jason scowled. "Hey, man, cut Nico some slack. So, Piper, what about this giant? What are you thinking?"
She and Leo exchanged a quizzical look, like, since when does Jason defend Nico to Angelo?
She decided not to comment.
"I keep thinking about fire," Piper said. "How we expect Leo to beat this giant because he's...
hot?"
Leo suggested with a grin.
Let's go with flammable. Anyway, that line from the prophecy bothers me. To storm or fire, the world must fall."
"Yeah, we know all about it," Leo promised. "You're gonna say I'm fire, and Jason here is storm."
Piper nodded reluctantly. She knew that none of them liked talking about this, but they all must have felt it was the truth. The ship pitched to starboard. Jason grabbed the icy railing.
"So you're worried one of us will endanger the quest, maybe accidentally destroy the world?"
"No," Piper said. "I think we've been reading that line the wrong way. The world, the earth, in Greek, the word for that would be..."
She hesitated, not wanting to say the name aloud, even at sea.
"Gia."
Jason's eyes gleamed with sudden interest.
"You mean, to storm or fire, Gia must fall?"
"Oh," Leo grinned even wider.
"You know, I like your version a lot better."
Because if Gia falls to me, Mr. Fire, that is absolutely copacetic.
Or to me, Storm. Jason kissed her.
Piper, that's brilliant. If you're right, this is great news. We just have to figure out which of us destroys Gia.
Maybe. She felt uneasy getting their hopes up. But, see, it's Storm or Fire.
She unsheathed Katoptris and set it on the console. Immediately, the blade flickered, showing the dark shape of the giant Clydeus moving through a corridor, snuffing out torches.
I'm worried about Leo in this fight with Clydeus, she said. That line in the prophecy makes it sound like only one of you can succeed. And if the storm or fire part is connected to the third line, an oath to keep with a final breath?
She didn't finish the thought, but from Jason's and Leo's expressions, she saw that they understood. If she was reading the prophecy right, either Leo or Jason would defeat Gia. The other one would die.
Chapter 42. Piper.
Leo stared at the dagger.
Okay, so I don't like your idea as much as I thought. You think one of us defeats Gia and the other one dies? Or maybe one of us dies while defeating her, or...
Guys, Jason said, we'll drive ourselves crazy overthinking it. You know how prophecies are. Heroes always get in trouble trying to thwart them.
Yeah, Leo muttered. We'd hate to get in trouble. We've got it so good right now.
You know what I mean, Jason said.
The final breath line might not be connected to the storm and fire part. For all we know, the two of us aren't even storm and fire. Percy can raise hurricanes.
And I could always set Coach Hedge on fire, Leo volunteered. Then he can be fire.
The thought of a blazing satyr screaming, "Die, scumbag!" as he attacked Gia was almost enough to make Piper laugh. Almost.
I hope I'm wrong, she said cautiously, but the whole quest started with us finding Hera and waking that giant king Porphyrion. I have a feeling the war will end with us too, for better or worse.
Hey, Jason said, personally, I like us.
Agreed, Leo said. Us is my favorite people.
Piper managed a smile. She really did love these guys. She wished she could use her charm speak on the Fates, describe a happy ending, and force them to make it come true. Unfortunately, it was hard to imagine a happy ending with all the dark thoughts in her head. She worried that the giant Clydeus had been put in their path to eliminate Leo as a threat. If so, that meant Gia would also try to eliminate Jason. Without storm or fire, their quest couldn't succeed. And this wintry weather bothered her too. She felt certain it was being caused by something more than just Diocletian's scepter. The cold wind, the mix of ice and rain, seemed actively hostile and somehow familiar. That smell in the air, the thick smell of... Piper should have understood what was happening sooner, but she'd spent most of her life in Southern California with no major changes of season. She hadn't grown up with that smell, the smell of impending snow. Every muscle in her body tensed.
Leo, sound the alarm.
Piper hadn't realized she was charm-speaking, but Leo immediately dropped his screwdriver and punched the alarm button. He frowned when nothing happened.
It's disconnected, he remembered. Festus is shut down. Give me a minute to get the system back online.
We don't have a minute.
Fires. We need vials of Greek fire. Jason, call the winds. Warm southerly winds.
Wait, what?
Jason stared at her in confusion.
Piper, what's wrong?
It's her.
Piper snatched up her dagger.
She's back. We have to...
Before she could finish, the boat listed to port. The temperature dropped so fast the sails crackled with ice. The bronze shields along the rails popped like overpressurized soda cans. Jason drew his sword, but it was too late. A wave of ice particles swept over him, coating him like a glazed donut and freezing him in place. Under a layer of ice, his eyes were wide with amazement.
Leo, flames, now!
Piper yelled.
Leo's right hand blazed, but the wind swirled around him and doused the fire.
Leo clutched his Archimedes sphere as a funnel cloud of sleet lifted him off his feet.
Hey!
He yelled.
Hey, let me go!
Piper ran toward him, but a voice in the storm said,
Oh, yes, Leo Valdez. I will let you go. Permanently.
Leo shot skyward, like he'd been launched from a catapult. He disappeared into the clouds.
No!
Piper raised her knife, but there was nothing to attack. She looked desperately at the stairwell, hoping to see her friends charging to the rescue, but a block of ice had sealed the hatch. The whole lower deck might have been frozen solid. She needed a better weapon to fight with, something more than her voice, a stupid fortune-telling dagger, and a cornucopia that shot ham and fresh fruit. She wondered whether she could make it to the ballista. Then her enemies appeared, and she realized that no weapon would be enough. Standing amidships was a girl in a flowing dress of white silk, her mane of black hair pinned back with a circlet of diamonds. Her eyes were the color of coffee, but without the warmth. Behind her stood her brothers, two young men with purple feathered wings, stark white hair, and jagged swords of celestial bronze.
So good to see you again, ma chère,
said Keone, the goddess of snow.
It's time we had a very cold reunion.
Chapter 43. Piper. Piper didn't plan to shoot blueberry muffins. The cornucopia must have sensed her distress and thought she and her visitors could use some warm baked goods. Half a dozen steamy muffins flew from the Horn of Plenty like buckshot. It wasn't the most effective opening attack. Keone simply leaned to one side. Most of the muffins sailed past her over the rail. Her brothers, the Boreads, each caught one and began to eat.
Muffins, said the bigger one.
Cal, Piper remembered, short for Calais. He was dressed exactly as he had been in Quebec, in cleats, sweatpants, and a red hockey jersey, and had two black eyes and several broken teeth.
Muffins are good.
Ah, merci,
said the scrawny brother, Zethys, she recalled, who stood on the catapult platform, his purple wings spread. His white hair was still feathered in a horrible disco-age mullet. The collar of his silk shirt stuck out over his breastplate. His chartreuse polyester pants were grotesquely tight, and his acne had only gotten worse. Despite that, he wriggled his eyebrows and smiled like he was the demigod of pickup artists.
I knew the pretty girl would miss me.
He spoke Quebecois French, which Piper translated effortlessly. Thanks to her mom, Aphrodite, the language of love was hardwired into her, though she didn't want to speak it with Zethys.
What are you doing?
Piper demanded. Then, in charm speak,
let my friends go.
Zethys blinked.
We should let your friends go.
Yes,
Cal agreed.
No, you idiots,
Keone snapped.
She is charm speaking. Use your wits.
Wits.
Cal frowned as if he wasn't sure what wits were.
Muffins are better.
He stuffed the whole thing in his mouth and began to chew. Zethys picked a blueberry off the top of his and nibbled it delicately.
Ah, my beautiful Piper, so long I have awaited to see you again. Sadly, my sister is right. We cannot let your friends go. In fact, we must take them to Quebec, where they shall be laughed at eternally. I am so sorry, but these are our orders.
Orders? Ever since last winter, Piper had expected Keone to show her frosty face sooner or later. When they defeated her at the wolf house in Sonoma, the snow goddess had vowed revenge. But why were Zethys and Cal here? In Quebec, the Boreads had seemed almost friendly, at least compared to their sub-zero sister.
Guys, listen, Piper said. Your sister disobeyed Boreas. She's working with the giants, trying to raise Gia. She's planning to take over your father's throne.
Keone laughed, soft and cold.
Dear Piper MacLean, you would manipulate my weak-willed brothers with your charms, like a true daughter of the Love Goddess. Such a skillful liar.
Liar? Piper cried. You tried to kill us. Zethys, she's working for Gia.
Zethys winced.
Alas, beautiful girl. We all are working for Gia now. I fear these orders are from our father, Boreas himself.
What?
Piper didn't want to believe it, but Keone's smug smile told her it was true.
At last my father saw the wisdom of my counsel, Keone purred. Or at least he did before his Roman side began warring with his Greek side. I fear he is quite incapacitated now, but he left me in charge. He has ordered that the forces of the North Wind be used in the service of King Porphyrion, and, of course, the Earth Mother.
Piper gulped. How are you even here? She gestured at the ice all over the ship. It's summer. Keone shrugged.
Our powers grow. The rules of nature are turned upside down. Once the Earth Mother wakes, we shall remake the world as we choose.
With hockey,
Cal said, his mouth still full.
And pizza and muffins.
Yes, yes, Keone sneered. I had to promise a few things to the big simpleton and to Zethys. Oh, my needs are simple.
Zethys slicked back his hair and winked at Piper.
I should have kept you at our palace when we first met, my dear Piper. But soon we will go there again, together, and I shall romance you most incredibly.
Thanks, but no thanks, Piper said.
Now, let Jason go. She put all her power into the words, and Zethys obeyed. He snapped his fingers. Jason instantly defrosted. He crumpled to the floor, gasping and steaming, but at least he was alive.
You imbecile!
Keone thrust out her hand, and Jason refroze, now flat on the deck like a bearskin rug. She wheeled on Zethys.
If you wish the girl as your prize, you must prove you can control her, not the other way around.
Yes, of course.
Zethys looked chagrined.
As for Jason Grace,
Keone's brown eyes gleamed.
He and the rest of your friends will join our court of ice statues in Quebec. Jason will grace my throne room.
Clever, Piper muttered. Take you all day to think up that line? At least she knew Jason was still alive, which made Piper a little less panicky. The deep freeze could be reversed. That meant her other friends were probably still alive below deck. She just needed a plan to free them. Unfortunately,